Today, fact sheets and teaching charts are due, is that right? And the test on Micah and Nahum? Okay, well, you pass those forward. I'll go get the test.
Pardon? It might be locked, I don't know. I may have to go search for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I need the exercise. I know you just jogged over it backwards.
I don't know.
Well, when you turn them in, just stick a little note to that effect. I'll lower it to B minus here. I won't care.
Okay, go ahead and clear your desks. Grading key I have for this one doesn't tell me what the time limit is on this test. Yeah, maybe you could tell me, huh? Well, I'll give you a reasonable amount of time. I'll just do the old show of hands thing, and then when it looks like there's just two left or something, I'll say 2 minutes. So we'll just play it on that basis. So, Minor Prophets, File 12, Test on Micah and Nahum. Put your name and the date on it, April 14th. Then turn it over and you can start when I give you the green light. That's an assumption on my part, I know. They may be sick, they may have the bubonic plague and be home. Okay. Everybody's got your test? You got your name and the date? 14, and make sure all seven pages are there. You may begin. How many are done? Raise your hands. Hey, liars or friars?
assignment.
Okay, let's exchange our papers. Okay, real quickly here. Part one, multiple choice, number one, the answer is C, letter C. David, can I see your paper real quick? I want to make sure I've got the same edition here. Yeah. Number two, letter E. Three, A. Number four, B. Five, letter C. Page two, letter number six, E. Number seven, C. Number eight, B. Number nine, E. Number ten, B. Page three, number 11, letter C. Number 12, letter B. Part two, check all that apply. Number one, letter A, check. B, check. C, blank. D, blank. E, check. F, blank. Question number two, letter A, blank. B, check. C, blank. D, blank. E, blank. F, check. So B and F are checked on that one. Page four, part three, matching. Question number one, 1 point, 1/2 point per blank. Letter A, 8. B, 12. C, 13. D, 10. E, 6. F, 3. G, 5. H, 9. I, 7. And J, 1. Anybody need any of those read over? Okay. Nahum, part one, multiple choice number one, letter A. 2A. Number three, they have to have two letters circled, no partial credit. B and D. B and D. No half, no partial credit. Page five, number four, is letter B. Number five is letter E. Number six is letter C. Number seven is D. Number eight is letter C. Page six. Number nine is letter B. 10 is letter C. 11 is E. 12 is B, like boy. 13 is C. 14 is letter D. And then page 7, part 2, check all that apply. Number 1, letter A, check. B, blank. C, blank. D, check. E, blank. F, check. Yes. 11, 12, 13. 11, E. 12, B. 13, C. 14, D, like David. All right. Rocky?
We have questions.
Yeah, yeah. All right, this is a 64-point total test, so carefully add up the number of minus points, deduct from 64. Return it to the owner. Owners, double-check your math, and then pass it forward. Yes.
I just have a question. Page two, question six. I wasn't sure. I didn't know which one it was either, but it was circled as E being the correct choice. And I was thinking of Zechariah, because we had Zechariah yesterday, and I thought that would look at more than next thing I did. It's called that
Not proportion. Right. Yeah, proportionately, Mike is. Zechariah, chapter 1, verse testing on some of these shorter books is that there's not enough material in the books themselves to come up with very many questions unless you really get nitpicky. If you really get into every little, you know, inconsequential thing, which is a kind of a, you know, an imbalanced way of testing on it, there's not a whole lot of material there. I've had the most difficulty writing tests of any class that I teach in this class, Minor Prophets. I almost wish we could make it pass-fail, bag the tests, and just teach on it. But okay, now we went through vision number one yesterday. So the application of that to the church. The church has been laid waste, just like Judah had. And I think that similarly, it is because of the indignation of God, because they did not follow His word, like Sardis, which had a name that it was alive but was dead, and Jesus did not find their works to be perfect before Him, Revelation 3, 1 through 6. But nevertheless, God is displeased with the heathen that are at ease. Rotherham renders it the careless or proud nations. And so He has returned to His church with mercies. God will build his temple, typifying the man-child. He will judge the heathen, God's overthrow of Persia, typifying the tribulation, plagues, and Armageddon. And so there is that relationship between how the world relates to the church, God's people, in their attitude, their sins coming to the full measure, and how and when God returns to bless and prosper and build his church. It was when the iniquity of the Amorites were said to be full that Israel was brought out of Egypt and judged them. And so there's a relationship there. Not that what the Amorites did was directed against Israel. Israel wasn't even there. They were in Egypt. But when their sin came to the full, that's when God blessed his people and judged the heathen in one and the same event. Genesis 15, 16. All right, then, the second vision. Chapter 1, verse 18. Then lifted up I mine eyes and saw, and behold, four horns. So this lifting up and seeing represents a second vision. God would have us to lift up our eyes too. That is to get them off the world and to put them upon Jesus. That puts us in a place to receive revelation from God. These horns are animal horns in the Hebrew, like of a ram or a goat or an ox. And of course, horns represent strength or power in the Bible. Amos 6:13, Jeremiah 48:25. And I said unto the angel that talked with me, What be these? And he answered me, These are the horns which have scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem. So the horns represent the nations, like Assyria and Babylonia, that had scattered Israel and Judah. Now as to who they are literally, you have to either take a literal view, four literal nations, four horns, or four symbolically as universal, any and all nations that scattered Israel and Judah throughout their history. One way or the other, you can take it. And I don't know that it's real dogmatically clear one way or the other. If you take it literally, then it kind of begs the question, well, which four? Then you have to play the game of going through history and saying, well, let me see, which were the ones that really scattered them? Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome. But Rome representing the Antichrist Empire at the end of time as well, like it does in Daniel's visions. Or is it, again, just universal? I think that's the safer tack to take on this, myself. Verse 20, And the Lord showed me four carpenters. The Hebrew actually is smiths. You know, a smith is someone who works in wood or metal or stone. Remember, under the spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy stands, the old poem. And so these are, and the word is used, for example, like for the workers on Solomon's temple. And the context doesn't tie it down as to what kinds of smiths these are here. But anyway, they're workers. Then said I, what come these to do? And he spake, saying, These are the horns which have scattered Judah, so that no man did lift up his head. But these, referring to the smiths, are come to fray them, and to cast out the horns of the Gentiles, which lift up their horn over the land of Judah to scatter it. To fray literally means to strike terror into them. It may be etymologically related to the word afraid, fray and afraid in the English. So it means to strike terror into them. And so these smiths are coming to strike terror into these horns or these powers that have scattered Judah and Israel. So they represent God using, and as we see historically, what did he do? He raised up one nation to overthrow another nation. He raised up Medo-Persia. Medo-Persia becomes the smith to overthrow Babylon. And Greece becomes a smith to overthrow Medo-Persia, and Rome becomes a smith to overthrow Greece, and the ten tribes become the smith to overthrow Rome, and the Antichrist Empire comes, and God himself overthrows that through his people, though. So this is a prophecy of hope. All of the enemies of the church All of the enemies of Israel shall be overcome. So God, the first vision was basically God's displeasure with the heathen that were carnally secure. The second one then is God will cause their overthrow. He's displeased with them, but he's not going to leave it at that. He's going to overthrow them. So this, both of these would, of course, serve to encourage Judah. All right, chapter 2, third vision. The gist of chapter 2 is a promise of restoration and prosperity for Judah in the end of time. And there are two parts to this vision in chapter 2. Verses 1 through 5 concerning the city, verses 6 through 13 concerning the nation. I lifted up mine eyes again and looked, and behold a man with a measuring line in his hand. So this man is like a surveyor who comes and measures out land for the purposes of building and expanding. Possibly this man is the angel of the Lord again that was seen on the red horse in vision 1. Then said I, whither goest thou? You know, he sees the man walking. And he said unto me, to measure Jerusalem, to see what is the breadth thereof and what is the length thereof. The point is that he's going to measure it with a view to its future expansion and rebuilding. Sais, in his commentary on Revelation 11, verse 1, page 236, says, quote, measuring is a judicial act, the laying down of lines and borders which are to mark and determine dimensions and boundaries. It is the sign of appropriation. When it is proposed to take possession and to have things put to their purpose, men begin to measure. So this is an expanding of the people of God, just like the millennial temple is measured in Ezekiel chapter 40. The temple of God is measured in the scripture that Sais was commenting on there, Revelation 11, 1 and 2, which is the two witnesses, the church after the rapture. Now, there are some prophecies in which they're measured for destruction, because they also used a measuring line before they tore down. But here it's for measuring line for building up. Measuring for destruction is an example, 2 Kings 21:13, Lamentations 2:8. Verse 3, and behold, the angel that talked with me, that's the interpreting angel, went forth, and another angel went out to meet him. So he sees the interpreting angel stepping forward. Then all of a sudden, another angel intervenes with an urgent message. So here's a messenger interrupting another messenger with a fresh message from the message giver, from God. So I guess that as it is with prophets, if there be something revealed to another one that sitteth by, let the first one hold his peace. That holds true with angels as well. Verse 4. And said unto him, run, speak to this young man, saying, Jerusalem shall be inhabited as towns without walls, for the multitude of men and cattle therein. Run, it's exciting news that is to be given, and speak to this young prophet, Zechariah. See, this is the indication that he was young. Although some feel that it's referring to the man with a measuring line that was in verse 1. But either way, the message is the same as far as Jerusalem is, and the prophecy is concerned. Without walls. Notice, without walls. That was unusual. They always had walls around their cities for protection. Point, they won't need protection now. They will dwell safely. Plus, they'll be expanding at such a prodigious rate that it would be, the walls would be obsolete as soon as the last stone was laid in them. They'd have to break them out again. So tremendous prophecy here. So he seems to be saying to the measuring line man, there's no need to measure. Jerusalem's going to be without walls, expanded and open for all to enter. This is really even a hint of salvation to the Gentiles, which would be to come. The nations coming in, Luke 14:23 with that. Now this was not something that was fulfilled in Zechariah's day or immediately after Zechariah's day or in the days of Herod. They always had walls. This is a millennial prophecy for the nation, and it's an end time prophecy for the church. You know, those walls represent our self-protection, our own self-defenses, our own great fears, around which we have built these huge barricades, lest anyone get in. But there is coming a day when Jerusalem, our hearts, will be expanded in God's love, and we won't need walls anymore. God will be our protection, as we see in verse 5. For I, saith the Lord, will be under her a wall of fire round about, and will be the glory in the midst of her. God will be the protection outwardly. God will be the glory inwardly. We won't need demonic barriers anymore. Just like he was the pillar of fire that led them before. Just as he was the glory in the Shekinah, in the Holy of Holies, now he's going to be the glory within Jerusalem itself. So this is a great glory. The entire city, the entire land will be filled with God's glory. Not just the Holy of Holies for the high priest to behold once yearly. Verse 6. Ho, ho, come forth and flee from the land of the north, saith the Lord. For I have spread you abroad as the four winds of the heaven, saith the Lord. Now, he's calling Israel, those that he has scattered throughout the world, and he's drawing them back into the land. This is, of course, another end-time prophecy. Jesus said, no man can come to me except the Father which has sent me draw him. John 6:44. God will draw his people back. Just like the invaders always entered Palestine from the north, now the Israelites themselves will re-enter the land from the north. Deliver thyself, O Zion, that dwellest with the daughter of Babylon. I believe this was a call to the many, many, many Jews that didn't return with Joshua, the high priest, and Zerubbabel, the governor, in 536 B.C., only about 50,000 there. I think there were hundreds of thousands that stayed. And I believe this call went out to those. And it was saying, I am going to bless my people here in the land, but you're going to lose out on it if you stay in Babylon. But I don't think that many heeded this call, unfortunately. But again, it becomes an end-time prophecy. All right, this is an end-time bell. So we'll continue with this when we come back next week.